You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Monday. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. And it is here. It is the post-mortem edition of the show, where we talk about the Pacers season officially being over after their 110-106 loss to the Boston Celtics in Game 4, making this series a sweep. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8.9 seconds. Today, we'll talk about that Game 4. I think that's it in terms of actual basketball. What went wrong, why they didn't win, why their season is over. Then I want to talk about Pritchard and McMillan, my thoughts on them. I've been kind of asked about them, but not super concretely. I'll just do some general off-the-wall stuff, which I'm sure half of you will hate and half of you will love for both. And then at the end, we'll start off-season preview stuff, not by actually stating opinions on decisions or anything like that, but just like what the off-season kind of will look like, the order of events, all that stuff. That'll be basically a baseline for us to talk about everything in more detail in the future. Adam will be on to talk postmortem stuff and get going on the offseason tomorrow. He was busy at a conference all weekend for work, so be on the lookout for that. As for the show in general, of course, we'll continue 5 days a week for the rest of this week and probably next week as well. But once the first full week of May starts, I think we'll drop to 3 a week, and then way off in the offseason, probably late July or August, we'll go down to 1 a week. But for now, still the normal 5 days a week that you're used to hearing. And that was a long intro to get started. Let's talk about Game 4. Pacers drop it, 110-106, if you didn't already know somehow. Sorry, that was rude for those of you that didn't get a chance to watch. Finally, an offensive game the Pacers can be at least somewhat proud of, putting 106 on the board. They didn't have any dud quarters. 23 in the first and third, 26 in the second, 34, very good in the fourth. A 57-point second half seems impossible given how terrible the halves, second halves in the first three games were. So that was good. But on the other hand, they sacrificed defense as a result. They gave up 110 and they lost. The 106 they scored would have won them any of the other three games, including pretty handily in the first two. But they didn't win this one. They gave up 110. The defense just maybe it was an effort on offense thing. I don't really know exactly what to pin it on, if anything, but the defense just wasn't good enough. The Celtics were hitting a lot of shots. They shot over 46% from the field. They hit over 39% from deep. They were 11-28, and they got to the line a ton, 34 free throw attempts, and they made 27 of them, which is all in tandem a recipe for success, including great performances from their whole bench. Phenomenal stuff from Gordon Hayward, Marcus Morris, and Terry Rozier, who were combined 18 of 26. That's very impressive. Daniel Tice played off the bench for them too, but he didn't shoot the ball. So that was really where the driver was, because the Pacers starters and the Celtics starters really went blow for blow. The highest scoring starter was Tatum for the Celtics at 18. Bojan outscored him. Thad was at 9. Horford was at 14. Baines at 2. Turner at 13. Wesley Matthews only scored 3. Jaylen Brown got him pretty easily, and then Collison actually outscored Kyrie. So that was pretty even the aggregate scores of those groups. The interesting thing at Turner I want to talk about, he had the exact same offensive stat line, 13.7 rebounds, as he did in Game 3, which I find to be fascinating, playing similar minutes. But this game, yeah, the defense, especially the second unit's defense, was not good enough, which is surprising. Usually that group has pretty good defense, since their point of attack D between Evans and Joseph is pretty good, but not in this game. It was just not to be. Gordon Hayward was getting to his spots. Marcus Morris was hitting the shots that were set up for him. Rozier actually had a pretty good series. Now that it's all said and done, he shot well and played good D. And then in the starters, Jaylen Brown continued to shoot well in the series, going 5-for-9. Everyone else really struggled, especially Horford. 4-for-19 for Al Horford. Full credit to the guys who guarded him, Thad, Miles, Domas, whoever it was, on any given possession. They all did a good job on him. But, the bench scoring for the Celtics was just too much to overcome. If you look at, you know, the plus-minus numbers, which is a team stat, just kind of show you exactly the flow of the game. The team was a positive for all the starters except Bojan, who was a -2, which means, you know, when those guys were on the floor together, they were outscoring the Celtics. Meanwhile, when the bench was on the floor together, which is usually versus the Celtics bench, which all had a giant plus, That's when they got outscored. And some of that, you know, Corey Joseph was just kind of bystander-y on offense. Five shots, only made two. Only two assists. He wasn't creating as much because they trusted Evans more after his solid game three. And Tyreek, 21 points, but it took him 18 shots. Did not shoot well from the field, although he was efficient thanks to good three-point shooting and getting to the line. And then Holiday played 6 minutes, missed his only shot, turned the ball over, three fouls, and did nothing else. But thank God he brought that energy, right, everybody who was telling me he should play? I just felt like getting in a petty jab there. He really wasn't. He didn't feel like he was, like, so terrible or anything. I'm feeling petty today, everybody. Sabonis was very good. Finally got a good game going for him. He was able to get to his left hand more than he was during any other game in the series. Shot 6 for 9, 14 points and 8 rebounds. But he fouled out in 6 minutes. The Celtics bigs were getting in to him and forcing those fouls. And the point of attack D, like I said, on the second unit wasn't as good. And those guys were getting by and getting to the line, which was just concerning. Kyrie, Tatum in particular, were having no trouble getting to the basket and drawing fouls. Turner had 4 fouls too. It was kind of a foul-happy game between the two teams. I think there were 62 free throws, which is just gross. And credit the Pacers. They did pretty well getting to the line too, particularly Bojan and Darren Collison. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough times. And they shot very well from the free throw line. 24 for 28. They just didn't make enough shots when it came down to it. So that was the general story of the game. The Celtics bench kicked butt. The Pacers didn't have quite enough firepower to keep up with that. And that's kind of the story of the series, not having enough firepower. And that's it. The season's over. It's kind of weird to say. I mean, we all knew. Me and Adam both predicted they would lose this series. We all kind of knew it would happen. But the sweep just, it feels so wrong. They competed so well that game in late March that I was optimistic they could compete in this series. They did not really. I mean, they were like in it all the time. They had quite a few good quarters, but talent wins out in the clutch, and Boston proved it once again that they're the better team. Sweep is embarrassing. I mean, this team did not. They were built around Vic. They didn't have Vic. Then without him, they didn't have the skills he provided, which are possibly the most crucial ones on both ends of the floor. Someone who can guard wings, someone who can create shots for his teammates. And, you know, it's not really an excuse because they all have to be good enough to win games even when the guy is out. But the reason they didn't have the skills required to win a playoff game is because the guy who possesses a lot of those skills was out. And that's just how it is. It's a tough asterisk. It's a tough end to the series to see the team just clearly not be good enough. But it is what it is. The Celtics move on, and now we shift. We pivot to off-season mode, where Vic could be back by the end of it. I don't know. I've heard so many ambiguous things about his return, although I will say he is coming along nicely and he's healing from what I've heard and seen, but I'd never know. Anyone who's listened for a long time to the show knows how terrible my medical prognoses are. So let's just move on. Probably two shorter blurbs to end the show today. One of them will be on just general thoughts on McMillan and Pritchard. The other one will be on the offseason, as I already said. So remember to check out this podcast on Himalaya. Check out all podcasts on Himalaya. It's more catered to you and you personally and not just being a hub for all podcasts. So go check it out. After the break, we'll talk executives and coaches. So the hot button topic on Twitter is Nate McMillan. Nate McMillan, I'll just cut the whole, just do the thesis first and then cut through the noise. Nate McMillan has not been a good playoff coach in his career, and he was not this year either. He hasn't had it. He's only made it out of the first round twice. This is like unfair because if you're in the playoffs, you clearly have good players, but he's had about as tough of a draw as you can have. You know, he got eliminated by like the Nash Suns and Tim Duncan Spurs and Dirk's Mavs and LeBron's Cavs twice, and then this year he didn't have Vic. Like, contextually, every year it's like justified losses, which is why it doesn't seem like he's so terrible. But just to, you know, 3 and 12. Wow, I might have just done some bad math. He's played 15 games, yeah. So 3 and 12 the last 3 years for the Pacers, just, I think, speaks volumes that he is just not a particularly good playoff coach. But he's a very good regular season coach, getting his guys focused enough to win those games and get them to the playoffs. And where you fall on him kind of depends on how you feel about both of those things. I think he's a good coach. I think the way he's developed a lot of these players, he's gotten Bojan to new heights, Turner, he's gotten Sabonis up to new heights. TJ Leafs looks a lot better from year one. You know, a lot of guys get better. A lot of guys get better, particularly on defense when they come to Indiana. A lot of that is because of scheme. A lot of that is because of coaching and development. But he's gotten a lot of guys better, and that speaks volumes to what he can be as a coach. That's enough to get them regular season wins in the playoffs. This year, maybe you have an asterisk because he didn't have Vic, and he just clearly did not have enough talent for it. I think without Vic this year, they finished 23-23, right? So, yeah, in those 46 games. So, literally, he's going up against the Celtics with a 500 team. That's unfair. But, you know, the asterisk only absolves him from, you know, an expected result. In each game, you know, having a 12-point quarter and an 8-point quarter, that looks bad for you. That speaks poorly upon you. I don't think all of that, you know, to say this looks bad on him. It just does. But I don't think he's going to lose his job. I think many want him to, but I have two pushbacks. One, who is better and available? If you like Luke Walton a lot, maybe you could have said that, but he got snatched up right away, and no one else is available who you can easily say, yeah, they're the guy you'd want there better. If you say Mark Jackson to me, I'm literally going to laugh in your face. So that's one reason to keep him, is you don't have a better replacement. Ben Gibson's been calling this the unicorn replacement theory. I 100% agree with that. Should the prime candidate open up, then yeah. And for those of you that listened last summer, you know that I was all on the Budenholzer train. And then when he got hired, I said, okay, now I guess you keep Nate because you don't have anybody better. So right now, with no better options, yeah, you keep him. And I will stay on that boat until a better option exists. That is what it is. Yeah, that I guess that's all the thoughts I have there. I think it would kind of, you know, this isn't the right way to look at it. This is just an opinion for the show. But, like, the Vic injury kind of absolves him from having a chance of getting fired because he has such a fallback excuse. And, it, you know, if you want him to get fired, that sucks. You know, you're gonna blame that for him keeping his job. I understand why you'd think that way. I think that he has a good fallback reason to not. And the guys who all play for the team like him, so... Yeah, I think he's safe. I think he'll be back next year. But then that's his last I don't remember exactly how his contract is set up. I think next year is his last year. And the Pacers don't like guys coaching with 1 year left, so who knows. I forget. I think he got a two-year extension last summer. So maybe he has two more years. Either way, he has a short amount of time left on his deal, so who knows. His future is murky. Now it's Kevin Pritchard. I want to talk about Kevin Pritchard. some of this... this playoff loss blood is on Nate's hands. Some is on the players' hands. You know, a lot of guys did not step up to the calling. In fact, pretty much everybody didn't step up to the calling outside of probably Bojan and Thad. But Kevin Pritchard has some blood on his hands too. He had about a little hair under 20 million, or a little hair over, excuse me, 20 million to work with last summer. So not enough for a max guy, but enough to add role players around the team that you already had. And we knew they were going to kind of punt off a year just because of the way the contracts of their team were set up. It would make more sense to work that way, try to gain more intel on Sabonis and Turner, and then really go for it this summer or now even next summer, given the way things have worked out. Anywho, the guys he added were filling up all that space. Doug McDermott, Tyreek Evans, Kyle Quinn, and none of them could contribute in the playoffs. Evans was actually pretty good in the playoffs, so maybe that's unfair. But none of them panned out. It's his job to get it right. Tyreek was not largely bad for probably half the playoffs. McDermott was not useful enough that they literally didn't play him in game four. They went with the forwards. They said, Bojan and Thad are going to play more minutes. Sorry, Doug, you're just not playing at all. We'll go three guard instead. O'Quinn only played in garbage time of game one. That's not enough. I mean, again, the goal was to basically gather more intel, try to improve the team, and win around with Vic healthy, and Vic wasn't healthy, so they signed players for one goal that was immediately unachievable on January 23rd, but the guys just not working out in the playoffs put some blood on his hands too. There's a lot of people who are at fault for this series going the way it did. Some is on McMillan, some is on Pritchard. I don't think either of them, you know, are losing their jobs over this or anything like that, but in you know, looking at it from the big picture, I think you have to observe their roles and where this team is right now and what their roles will look like going forward. I think they'll both be back again, but they have some introspective thinking to do and some improvements to make. So speaking of Pritchard and improvements, let's talk about the offseason, but it'll mostly be generality here. Don't expect me to get super into decisions here, although I might make some because I am who I am. So one more break, then we'll start the offseason, setting the foundation for what we're going to talk about all summer. All right, so everyone's favorite thing is the offseason for some reason. I think a lot of people who follow me don't actually like basketball. I know everyone who listens to this likes basketball, but the offseason is here, and it's really going to be an interesting one. The Pacers, it's going to be very finicky for them. They've got Thad Young as a free agent, Tyreke Evans as a free agent, Bojan Bogdanovic as a free agent, Darren Collison as a free agent, Corey Joseph as a free agent, Kyle O'Quinn as a free agent. That's a lot of dudes who the team... Oh, and Wes Matthews as a free agent. My goodness. That's a lot of dudes to replace. That's a lot of big picture stuff. I won't get into who I would and would not try to pursue from that group right now. But I have tweeted it, so you can go find it if you really want. That's just a lot of dudes and roles to replace on the team. A lot of dudes who were good in one or both of the last 2 years of this era of the team. It's going to be very interesting to see who they try to bring back and what's important to them as an organization in terms of setting their goals to improve the team for next year. I like Thad Young and Bojan and probably Corey Joseph are all guys who for sure like their role is best suited on a winning team. Darren Collison could probably play for any level of team, except for, you know, he'd be a backup on obviously a championship contender. But he, you know, his role as a steady point guard has a role on every team. Tyreke Evans clearly is better with the ball in his hands a lot, but he's not so good that he can be like a high usage guy on a good team. So he's probably destined to be like the best player on a not great team. Kyle O'Quinn is great as like a reserve center for a good team. And Wes Matthews is good as a role player for a good team or a good vet for a bad team. So there's some guys that make more sense in the context of where the Pacers are than others. That is what I will say about those guys. But there are dates coming up too that are important. These are less so important for, These are less so important for like actual decision making and more so just like the order of events you do and when trades can happen and all stuff like that. So first up is the draft is in the June 20 range, and I should know the exact day because I'm talking about key dates. The 2019 NBA draft is June 20th. I was almost exactly right. They can't trade drafted players after drafted until late July. They can agree to trades in principle, but trades can be made on draft night. You all know that stuff. You know, the trade with the pick can be made anytime if they want to do that. Starting right now, they can trade with any team that's no longer in the process. So the first non-draft date, May 11th, Edmund Sumner could officially be traded that day. That is 4 months after he was, or sorry, 3 months, there it is, after he was officially signed to his deal with the team. Except they can't technically trade him that day because his contract right now is technically quote-unquote expiring because he has a team option, which brings me to the second date, which is June 29th, is when they have to decide on their team option for Edmund Sumner next year, which is at the minimum. I said I wouldn't opinionize, but I will. I'm almost sure they'll keep him around at the minimum. And if they do that by May 11th, in theory, they could trade him if a team wanted him in a move before July 1st started. So perhaps they pick up his option early on, which is an interesting thing. Haha, I got something interesting that you haven't heard yet about the offseason. But it's very minor for that. After that, the next date is July 1st. That's when free agency officially opens and they can sign guys or re-sign their own guys. Who knows what will happen there. That will be a fun 2 weeks. Then the next one's July 17th. That is July 17th. My God, I can't read. There's a 7 right there, so I said 17. July 15th, that is when Alize Johnson's contract fully guarantees for next year. I, like Sumner, almost certainly imagine he will be on the roster. Because that guarantee date is post-July, he can be traded at any time this offseason, which is good. Other than that, it's just signing guys up until right before the season starts and developing the guys you draft and fitting them in with the organization, fitting in all your new guys, all that stuff. Then the day before the 2019 season, that is when rookie extensions for guys who have done 3 years as rookies have to be finalized. So that is key for Sabonis. If they want to offer Sabonis an extension, they have to decide by then. Those discussions will be very interesting considering we don't know what to make of the Miles Turner-Domantas Sabonis pairing, which I will talk about on a later show this week. So that will be interesting. I do not expect them to have an extension done for Sabonis, though I don't know. And the last date is technically after the season starts, but it's really an off-season decision. October 31st, the team options for TJ Leafs. So TJ Leafs' fourth-year rookie option has to be decided by then. That's at $4.3 million for the 2020-2021 season. If they like his development, maybe they'll keep him around, although that's a very interesting call. I have no idea what they're going to do with that. I don't know if what the role they envision for him next year, if they think he can be the backup power forward. Gary, I know you don't think so, but I look forward to hearing from you about TJ Leaf tomorrow. But that's a big jump from his current salary. It's almost $2 million higher, or $1.5 million higher. So they have to make an interesting decision on him to see if they'd rather have the cap space at that amount or not. If they decline it, they can't sign him for more than that the year after if he does become good. So who knows? The Pacers usually pick up all 4 years for their rookies. We'll see. Same date, deadline for Aaron Holiday's third-year option, which will assuredly 100% be picked up. Done. That's the whole discussion. That will not even be a podcast. So, yeah, that's the basis for what's going to happen this offseason. They're going to make a call on Edmund Sumner and then scout like crazy and then draft and then sign guys and then keep Zay and then make extension talk. It's going to be fun. And there's a lot of decisions along the way with their own free agents, like we talked about at the start. So we'll cover it all here. It's everybody's favorite topic. Be prepared for that. I'll be writing about a lot of it too. Thank you guys for following along all season. We really appreciate it. It's always so fun to talk about the Pacers with you guys and hear how many people actually listen to this show. It blows my mind. Me and Adam will have a more heartfelt thank you tomorrow. Thank you guys for listening to this episode in particular. I hope you guys enjoy the offseason and have a great week, not stressing about games. As always, you can follow the show at Locked On Pacers on Twitter to know when shows are released and yell at us. Thank you guys so much again for tuning in, and have a great rest of your day.